The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.
Chuck, I need to know your prediction for what's going to happen with Bomani Jones. This is a podcast. Bomani's like, I don't know, is he the best podcaster? He's one of them, right? He just put out on Twitter. He said that he's got a story today. He's got something to say. He's got an announcement. I'm wondering what you think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know what it could be. We'll see what's going on there. But, you know, Bomani's smart. I'm sure it's going to be something that blows everybody's mind when he, you know, releases whatever it is he has to say. And I know I saw the awful announcing thing that said he's probably going to leave ESPN.
Basically he said, like, a lot of that was just reading the tea leaves, but he does have something to say. So I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah.
Bomani unleashed. This is The Counter. We are part of the NFL team for the win. And we're here to give you some picks. We'll tell you, Charles will, you're doing well. You went 8-8 last week, right? So you're like, you're still hovering around 500.
Yeah, Charles Curtis caught up to me. He had a good week last week.
Oh, did he? I think
he went 10-6. I went 8-8.
Oh, wow. All right. It's getting heated. I like it. So we're going to go through picks for each game. We're going to talk about a couple stories percolating around the NFL. Justin Fields is, in fact, the Chicago Bears starter. We've been advocating for that for a while, but we will break that down a little bit. Urban Meyer is still the head coach of the Jaguars. We've been advocating for that not to be the case. Apparently Shad Khan didn't listen to us. Going to talk Thursday Night Football. Actually, a good game this week. Really, really exciting matchup. And the Stephon Gilmore trade, you know, the Patriots end up sending him to the Panthers, which, you know, if anybody had said 6 weeks ago that it would be really interesting for the Panthers to make a trade like that, nobody would have believed you. But it's a really interesting trade and maybe puts the Panthers, lost Horn and, you know, now to have a replacement sort of puts that defense back in a place where it can maybe compete. We saw it get exposed a little bit against the Cowboys, which the Cowboys have so many weapons and a great quarterback who knows how to use them. But having a player of Gilmore's caliber, it's a pretty big step. So we're going to break all that down. Let's start with Justin Fields. You wrote a little ditty about this yesterday when it was finally announced that Matt Nagy had made the decision. And I want to get your analysis of it a little bit, but what do you think finally triggered this? Why now?
I honestly don't really know. Maybe he watched the tape from Sunday. I don't really know because, you know, people were tweeting at me like, what could have changed in the past 6 days for this to happen? My response is, what changed in the past 2 days for this to happen? Because,
right,
you know, even after that game on Sunday where Fields just blacked out and, you know, just dominated the Lions, basically outside of like one play where the snap was bad, he got sacked for 24 yards. You know, he played as well as we thought that he could have been when he was drafted out of Ohio State. And then right after the game, Matt Nagy says, Andy's still the starter when he gets healthy. And
right,
Justin is the starter because they saw him in practice do some things that they didn't know he could do, or he looks more confident. Like when you give a guy more reps with the starting offense, he's going to look a little bit better, Matt. Like, that's how things tend to happen. I don't know if it was just like public pressure getting to him and him just realizing that he's just being stubborn and doing the wrong thing because he's like on his way out. And this is like the last little bit of power he holds. But I still don't have a clear answer, to me at least, as to why this change happened now.
Right. I mean, and nobody seems to, right? The Jeff Dickerson, who covers the Bears for ESPN, like, wrote this story, like, why, five reasons why the Chicago Bears are sticking with Justin Fields. And then all the reasons are like things that nothing changed. The Bears moved up to get him. That's been true since the draft.
Right.
Dalton's knee injury has been around for a little bit. I guess maybe that's the one thing. Maybe they decided Dalton's knee injury is serious enough that he's not going to get all the way back. But three was big play potential. Like, Justin Fields has had bigger big play potential than any Dalton like literally for 5 years now. Like he was a college quarterback who was more likely to make, you know, who had a better arm and could run. And number four is he can run. And then number five, it's what the city wanted. So, you know, like to me, that's maybe as close to anything. The answer is that somebody just said to Matt Nagy, somebody in the organization just said, like, you know, we got to give fans what they want. And you brought up a good point in your post. Justin Fields, like, this is a crazy thing to say, right? This dude is a few weeks into his professional career, but he has all the makings of potentially the best quarterback in Bears history. And I'm sorry that I'm laughing because I have relatives in Chicago, but like that is so true. Like the Chicago Bears are a cursed quarterback franchise. Like they had Sid Luckman, who finished his career in 1950. And then it's like Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
Jim McMahon, Jim Harbaugh, Rex Grossman. Oh, remember Rex Grossman?
This is what I'm saying. Like I wrote that, like he could easily become the best Bears quarterback
easily.
Of all time. Because like, here's the thing with Sid Luckman. 1942. Okay, yeah, dude,
like, there's no quarterbacking. There's just look, we're different black, people we're, running.
Were black players even allowed?
Right? Not in Chicago.
Yeah, if you were playing pre-integration, I'm sorry, I'm not taking that as seriously maybe as you would like me to. So
no,
yeah. Justin Fields, like the bar for him to become like the best Bears quarterback of the modern era is very, very low. Like basically right. All he has to do is put together a few seasons of like above average passing and dynamic running, and that's all it's going to take. So yeah, I'm happy for, you know, Bears fans. My dad, who is, you know, been swimming in misery for his
poor
entire
guy.
Adult life. Now, you know, he's got someone that we can root for. And you know, Justin Fields is also just fun to watch. So, you know, like I said, the barrier to becoming the best Bears quarterback of all time, not very high. And honestly, he might be able to make a stake for that claim by the end of the season.
Yeah. I mean, it really, I had not thought much about the history of the Chicago Bears quarterback position until I read your story and I was thinking about it. And it really is true. It's
bad.
Just been a wasteland. It's hard to believe that, you know, one of the more historic franchises just has never really found a good answer. And now they finally have one and they were like slow playing it for reasons that, as we discussed, we have no idea. As you watch film, as you've watched like the Bears, both with Dalton and with Fields, how tailored is this offense right now for Justin Fields? And what do you think you'll see as it evolves to really fit him now that he's the guy?
I thought one of the big things that they did was just one, the offensive line held up a lot better than they did last week. I mean, not facing Myles Garrett helps. And then the Lions lost their best pass rusher, Romeo Okwara, during the game. So, mm-hmm. you know, that helps. But just in general, like I thought that kind of the play calling for Justin Fields' sake, which is not as scared as it was against the Browns. And I think it's like a different type of scare that you have against the Browns, where I almost feel like I don't want to accuse Matt Nagy of sabotage. So like, I'll just say like struck by fear maybe of what was happening in that game and how many sacks they were taking. And, you know, maybe it just felt like such an insurmountable problem that they couldn't really think of a situation on the fly or a solution on the fly. But this week, you know, you have a little bit more six-man protections. You have more plays where the running back is at least staying into chip before going out on a route. And then I thought the big thing was you let him actually take some downfield throws, which to me is like one of his strengths coming out of Ohio State. Like just this guy who, even if things are not going right, like you can hit a big play down the field. Like not to compare the two like talent wise, because I think Fields is a higher ceiling, but like it's almost kind of the way that like Daniel Jones has been able to keep a starting job like over the past couple of years, where you know you might mess up on some short and intermediate stuff, but when we ask you to throw deep and try to generate a big play, you can do that. And I thought that that's one area that Justin Fields really shine. You know, the throw to Allen Robinson, people keep coming back to, was obviously incredible along the sideline. He had another deep throw to Darnell Mooney. I mean, you know, he had 207 yards on 17 pass attempts. So, you know, you're getting a lot out of those attempts that you have. You know, there's still some stuff to clean up. Like, I thought that there was one cross that he threw to Darnell Mooney where, you know, Mooney made the catch and it was a big game, but he had to jump a little bit and then fell. But if he could have stayed on his feet, you know, you're talking about, you know, 50 or 60 yard play. So, you know, it's all the things that you want to see from Justin Fields. And then, you know, you have the athleticism and the running that are going to just add up to the offense that you can do. Like the play that I posted on Twitter and in the article where, you know, he's, you know, you kind of forget how fast this guy is because he's so, he wants to be someone that sits in the pocket first. So you kind of forget that he's like a legit 4.4, 4.3 guy.
Right.
And he had a play where he broke the pocket and was trying to decide, like, am I going to throw it? Am I going to run for a first down? It's 3rd and 4. And then he decides to just take off and he toasted the safety that was running after him and beat someone else to the sideline and ended up getting like 8 or 9 yards on 3rd and 4. So, you know, that's a play that Andy Dalton can't make. And if Matt Nagy wants to save his job, he should probably go with the guy that make the plays that his other guy can't make.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing, too, about you talking about Nagy just seeming afraid. And that it really did feel that way every time Fields got in at any point in the season, just that they had installed this offense for Dalton and they weren't going to adjust to Fields, even though he's such a different player, especially compared to 2021 Andy Dalton, right? This guy is getting up there. Yeah. This is not, I mean, he was a little, he could throw on the run when he was younger, right? He could move around a little bit, but Justin Fields is a totally different athlete. And also those throws down the field, like why wouldn't you go to that early to show defenses that he can do that? Because that changes everything underneath, right? Like if a team sees a guy throw the ball 50 yards in a rope, which Justin Fields can do and now has done in the NFL, that changes everything that they're going to do and opens up some of those throws that maybe he's struggling with over the middle or out to the flats or whatever. It changes what he's seeing. It changes everything. And like that's why you draft a guy. That's why you trade up to get a guy like Justin Fields, because he scares defensive coordinators and changes what they're going to do. And, you know, it just seems like Matt Nagy, the theme of the year for him has just been slow adaptation to what's in front of him. But now the right decision has been made. And I guess we'll see how the Bears adjust and how Fields adapts to this position that, you know, I think we've all thought he was ready for a while. Let's talk about the Gilmore trade. I guess what I'm wondering here is if you have a theory. So the Patriots, it was well known that they were looking to trade him. The Patriots were, you know, they're in sort of a little mini rebuild. He's a more expensive veteran. You know, and Bill Belichick just has a history of getting rid of dudes before they start falling off. Like that's sort of how he operates. So they never found a trade partner. And then yesterday word leaked that he was going to be waived. And then all of a sudden word leaked that he wasn't going to be waived because a bunch of teams made trade offers. What is your understanding of what happened here? Like, why wouldn't Bill Belichick have like called around before leaking the fact that he was going to get cut? Like, I'm just confused about what happened.
Well, I mean, we all know that Gilmore was looking for a new contract. I'm not sure why I'm not really sure like why he hasn't been playing all that much. I don't know if this is like a way for him to just say, "Oh, I'm hurt. Like, need a new deal." Right. Like just to extend that without, you know, risking himself for injury on the field. So, you know, the Panthers come in with, you know, a 2023 sixth rounder. So sixth rounder, two drafts from now.
Right.
And, you know, if Gilmore is even like 70% of what he was in 2019, that's a huge win for the Panthers where, you know, you're getting someone who can be like a top 10 cornerback. Like, I don't know if he's still best cornerback in the league type of guy, but still, like, this is someone you would like to have.
He's better than C.J. Henderson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
like, for sure. You know, like.
And I guess, you know, you get to a point where if neither sides are budging on money, maybe Bill just kind of decide, fine, then we're done here. And maybe the saying that they were going to waive him is a way to get picks. But, you know, I think that one thing that's interesting about this trade is I wonder if the Panthers were able to sell Gilmore on, hey, come over here, come back home, which is the big thing. And he talks about Rock Hill,
right?
And what that area means to him. It's about 30 minutes south of Charlotte.
Right.
Hey, come here, come back home and, you know, play out your current contract in the area that's familiar to you. I wonder if that was the pitch for them, because it just kind of seems baffling that the Patriots, you know, maybe this is just a Patriots thing where they played hardball to the point where they kind of screwed this up and had to let Gilmore go. But, you know, from my understanding, Gilmore he's from Rock Hill. He already has a house in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Scott Fitter, the GM, said that Gilmore lives like three or four
doors a couple doors down. Right.
Right. So, you know, I don't think that, you know, that was the deciding factor for him. But we know that area means a lot to Stephon Gilmore. And look, like if you're at this point in your career, you know, you're kind of thinking about what's next for you after football. I can imagine that, hey, how about you? We go back home to a team that is 3-1. They appear to have a pretty good team culture. And, you know, you already have a home in the area and your family is 30 minutes away. Like, that's a pretty easy sell, I can imagine. If you're already down to the point of, you know, we need suitors and we need to make this thing happen. And I think also, you know, the Panthers, they could have gotten in there before the Bucks had a chance to sign him in free agency, too. Like, I don't think that back. Ignored as well, because the Bucks cornerback situation, as we saw on Monday, is right. Not the great, and you don't get to play Mac Jones every week.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, there were presumably a bunch of teams that would have wanted Gilmore.
Yeah, the Packers were in there too.
Yeah, the you have to think that the Chiefs were probably thinking about it. I mean, they're.
Well, the thing that's so interesting to me is like this market inefficiency, where you get to this point where, you know, you have these veterans that we know are good football players getting traded for like fifth and sixth round picks. Like the Calais Campbell trade comes to mind.
Yeah.
And I mean, you ask the Ravens what they would rather have over the past few years, like elite run defense from Calais Campbell or, you know, some fifth round rookie that might not even be on the team anymore. It's just weird that this is a spot that, you know, those picks end up being somewhat valuable.
Right. And the salary, you know, the salary cap, the flatness of it has probably exacerbated the problem, right? Like it hasn't gone up the way it was supposed to because of the pandemic. So there's even more crunch and you're just seeing guys, you know, the Cowboys cut that linebacker, Jalen Smith, right? That was the same thing. Like they, you know, planted, like he's obviously a good player. They decided that Micah Parsons was good enough to fill most of that, and they would rather save the money down the line. And I guess he just signed with the Packers. But yeah, it's sort of a weird, you know, it's a different way for rosters to be put together than maybe what we're used to a few years ago. But just what happens when you have this, you know, everything based on the salary cap. It's so important. The Panthers, man, it looks like they could get Christian McCaffrey back this week against the Eagles. The Eagles are terrible. They got the Vikings after that, Giants, Falcons, Patriots. Like, this team is set up to make a playoff run. They don't really have a tough game until November 14th when they're at Arizona. Worth watching. Also worth watching, tonight's Thursday night game. It's the Rams versus the Seahawks. I know that in your picks, you pointed out that the Seahawks defense has not been good against good teams. So it feels like the Rams will be able to put up some yards in this one. The Rams coming off that loss to the Cardinals. What are you thinking about this game? What are you excited about to watch tonight?
I'm really just kind of excited to see Matthew Stafford just torch his defense, honestly. that is just what I'm most excited to see. That offense is just so much fun when they're rolling, and I just feel like this is the perfect matchup for them to kind of exploit on a short week. And, you know, I used to be a defensive guy, but now I've become a guy like, show me the touchdowns, man. Like, show me the big play. Like, I want to see all that stuff. So, you know, DeSean Jackson, Matthew Stafford, all the speed that they have a wide receiver on a short versus the Seahawks. Honestly, I'm just excited to see them put that to use.
Yeah, that's a big change to go from defense to being an offensive guy. How'd that happen?
I started looking at this more as like a entertainment product instead of like this hard physical game. Because, you know, like the further you get removed from playing the game, I just feel like I was like, I like watching big plays and I don't really care when defenses get mad as much. Like there's still some DPI stuff that bothers me. But, you know, for the most part, scoring touchdowns is good for us as a business, you know?
Yeah. That's true. That's why people watch. What did you make of just a little bit of a detour? But Brandon Staley had this quote about running the football, and the reason it's important is because it brings a physical element. Everybody sort of went crazy about it, and I was just sort of confused as to why people got so excited about that quote.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, he was just saying stuff that was like kind of obvious.
Right.
The one thing that I kind of wish that he had gotten to, which I think he was alluding to, was when he was saying like you want to run to get the physical element on the field. But if he had just taken like a step further and saying like, you know, this is how, because if you run, you can kind of keep the defense from going into like six or seven defensive backs on the field. Because right. I think that's kind of what he was talking about. Because, you know, right. you don't want to get into a situation where you got, you know, DBs on, you know,
right.
linemen and tight ends. Because that's how you get into a situation like what the Packers were dealing with when they lost the NFC Championship game, the game where Jimmy Garoppolo threw like eight passes and
right.
they got torched. Like, you can't live in a dime or quarter defense because of the physicality of the game. You know, you're just going to get body on body and just get blown up. And I mean, you know, I think he was just trying to say like in a nice way, you know, this still is a game with people on the field and those people are feeling things that you really can't quantify because football is a very painful sport. And if you can inflict pain on the other people, you have a good chance of winning.
Right, right. I mean, so much of it is about manipulating how many large dudes they have versus how many fast dudes they have. And like, you cannot hope to pass the ball if they just are, like you said, have six, seven really fast guys out there who can match up. Defenses are so sophisticated. Those players are so smart and well-trained at moving to where they need to move and they can get there. And it makes it hard on any quarterback. You know, you're forcing them to throw into the tiniest of windows in that situation. So if you can run the ball a little bit and make them play linebackers, you know, and play their bigger linebackers, that's what you want. You know, that's the battle we see every week. In tonight's game, what's sort of the key matchup for you? The Seahawks are, the secondary is just not good. And
yeah.
I think Sidney Jones is now starting at cornerback. That looks like it could be a real problem.
Yeah, that is a big one. And then, you know, my buddy, this is a Twitter deep cut, but Seahawks, you know, I think it's C Mike Spin Move or something like that. I forget his name. His name's Griff, but he does like a fantastic job breaking down Seattle's defense on a level that even I, you know, goes over my head a little bit sometimes. And basically, he's saying that Bobby Wagner is not the same player that he used to be. So
interesting.
So, you know, I'm kind of interested to see because we know that, you know, these newer play callers, like, you know, Steven would do the meme where it's
Nate Geary.
Yeah. He's got his little microscope glasses or whatever on the right. linebacker. Like, I kind of wonder if the Rams are going to do a thing tonight where they try to like stretch the field horizontally, vertically, make Bobby run, then cut receivers under and over him. So I'm interested to see just the ways that they attack this pass defense, because really it's kind of all there for the taking. I mean, Seattle's pass rush has not been great this year. They're banged up on defense and their cornerbacks are really young. So I like if they can just kind of keep Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs from, you know, getting like a play or two on defense that flips the game around, I'm really gonna steamroll them.
Yeah. Yeah, the Seahawks linebacking core just in general, and I don't, you know, I didn't look at snap charts or anything before, but Jordan Brooks is below average, you know, like especially for a first round pick. And then I don't even know who they else they have playing. Cody Barton, maybe. Like it's just not good. You know, like you we're so accustomed to the Seahawks being able to roll out guys who were at least competent at pretty much every position. And that's a real, I mean, they're, it looks like just their back. I mean, everyone, their back seven is questionable. It looks like, so, yeah. It should be the Rams, sort of pulling that defense apart and putting up yards. All right. You want to get into picks?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. That game you went with the Rams. No surprise. The Seahawks are getting 2.5, even though they're at home. I mean, as you point out, the Seahawks handled Jimmy G and Trey Lance last week. It'll be different this week. Jets at Falcons. Wow. Wow. This game is going to happen, huh? Falcons -3.5.
Yeah. I went with the Falcons here, actually.
I know. I know.
And honestly, this is just more me being exposed to Jets football. This season, that team is really, really bad. I know I talk a lot of crap about the Falcons, and I mean they definitely might lose this game. I mean, whatever, it's what they do. They're known to do stuff like this. But I really do think that they're a little bit better, you know, than where the Jets are right now. That Jets passing offense is really bad. Even so bad that the Falcons can maybe even play well against them. So. You know, I think that this game is actually interesting because there's not in the whole 60 minutes will be interesting, but right. There's weirdly a decent amount of star power here where, you know, on the Jets defense, they have Quinnen Williams, who basically since he has recovered from his shoulder injury that, you know, hurt him early in the season, has been like totally unblockable. They have C.J. Mosley, who's playing lights-out football on defense. Right. Then, you know, you have Zach Wilson at quarterback. And on the Falcons side, you know, you even got guys like Ridley, Pitts, Grady Jarrett, you know, guys that people have heard of that are still playing good football in their prime. So, you know, it may not be a cool 60-minute games, but I started, running through the rosters. I'm like, oh, you know, there's actually a handful of players that I – enjoy watching just for like the sake of being a football fan. So maybe that's something you can get into, but I do think that the Falcons take this game home.
Pitt's breakout game. Is it coming?
I don't know, but hey, look, if there's any week for him to do it, it's this week because you can have more fans cheering him on than he has at any Falcons game this season.
Yeah. I feel bad for you that these are probably the two NFL teams that you know most well, right?
Yeah, I got hit up
the most time thinking about
a lot for, you know, Jets podcast this week, and I'm just sitting there, I'm like, do I really know that much about the Jets still? And then I'm rattling off like their depth chart off the top of my head. I'm still inundated with this team.
So it doesn't go away.
Look, I'll be up at 9:30 with my coffee with a little bit of alcohol in it just to see if I can get through the day.
Eagles at Panthers. Talked about what's going on with the Panthers. Panthers are giving 3.5 on this one. You went with the birds.
Yeah, I did. Just because I feel like the Panthers defense is still trying to figure out what they're doing without J.C. Horn. And also, I think that the Eagles defensive line, particularly the interior, they're in a spot where they can play well against this Panthers offensive line. Like this one was actually pretty tough for me to pick, but I feel like in a moment, like this moment in time where the Panthers defense is still kind of in transition a little bit as they figure out who to put where now that J.C. Horn's out, because you know, I think we saw versus Dallas, like Dallas's offense is a juggernaut, but still like you felt the impact of not having your stud rookie corner out there who was really playing as good a ball as, you know, most corners in the league outside of like Jalen Ramsey, at least I thought until he got hurt. So that's a big loss to deal with. And I think that this Eagles offense, they have like just enough to maybe make it scrappy towards the end. And I'm going to take them to cover the spread, but I'm not quite sure if they win the game.
You say here Jalen Hurts' production this year is a little funny money. Wanted to dig in on that a little bit. There was a tweet going around this week that compared Hurts' first, I guess, 8 games to Lamar Jackson's first 8 games, and Hurts' numbers looked a little bit better. But I certainly agree that that's like that's not a true indication of where Jalen Hurts is. But what do you mean when you say that it's been a little funny money? I mean, he's obviously put up huge numbers against bad defenses.
Yeah, like the Falcons game, I think, is kind of a good example. And even the game the week later against San Francisco, where, I mean, versus the Falcons, you just had a ton of short passes. Like, I think he ended up with a yard per attempt of 9, and his A-dot was like 3. So, right. You know, that kind of tells the story there. You're getting a ton of yards after the catch, making guys miss, all that stuff, which, you know, doesn't really have too much to do with the quarterback as long as you're just getting the ball there on time and, you know, not leading guys right into the teeth of the defense, which is not the most difficult job for an NFL quarterback to do. And then, you know, the week after against San Francisco, like, you're not hitting much, but you're hitting a 9 ball that goes for like 90 yards or a go route, I should say, you know, just run straight down the field. And that's one thing that he can do. But outside of that, he's not doing all that much as a passer. It's like short stuff and really long stuff. In the intermediate portion of the field, you know, it sounds like football hard-o cliche guy, but, you know, that is an important thing that you need to be able to hit to keep defenses honest. So they can't just back up or crowd the line of scrimmage, because honestly, like, if I'm a defensive coordinator playing the Eagles, I'm just going to be like, fine, like, you hit that 9 ball as much as you can, because that's a really low percentage throw. And even if you're able to hit it at an above average league rate, that's still, you know, not something you can rely on, like, to keep you in games like constantly. So, right. You know, I think that Jalen Hurts has certainly improved over last year. Like, I don't think that anyone can deny that, but in terms of like anointing him as like the next long-term Eagles quarterback, I'm not quite there. But, you know, I will say this, like, we're talking about a guy who has what, like 9-10 start in his career. So, you know, I don't want to come down too hard on him and say that this is just what's going to be forever, because within those 9 games, he's shown that he can play a lot better football from game 1 to game 10. So,
right.
You know, I think that what he's done right now is like, the numbers look good. When you go back and watch it, it's just all right. But this is definitely someone who has potential to get better down the road.
Right. And yeah, and while the Eagles have all the draft capital in the world to pick a quarterback, it might not, like, there might not be a quarterback to pick. Like, the draft class, it just does not look that impressive. I mean, obviously hype is going to build, guys are going to emerge. When a draft season comes, people are going to get fired up about on-campus workouts or combine or whatever. Like, we know quarterbacks will go in the first round, but like, sitting here now looking at that class, like, is it, like, how convinced is anyone that any of those guys are going to be drastically better than Jalen Hurts? You know, like, so the Eagles are in an interesting spot. Dolphins at Bucks. Bucks are giving 10.5 in this game.
Yeah. I dude, Jacoby Brissett, it just hasn't looked good. At least he's trying out there. Like, at least you can't say it's like some Roethlisberger crap where he's just like, you know, floundering. He's trying. He's not that good. And I think that, you know, it's not just him. Like, the Dolphins as a whole, they just don't look good this year. The defense is not playing as well as last year. They're not getting as many turnovers, which is, you know, kind of hard to, you know, parse from a year to year sample size. Like, it's hard to be a team that gets a ton of turnovers every single year, because those can be kind of random. And they're kind of seeing the effects of not being able to do that this year. They're just kind of like a mediocre defense. And when you have a mediocre defense with a really, 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 really bad passing game on the other side on offense, you're not going to win a lot of football games. And I think that that's the unfortunate place that the Dolphins have found themselves.
Yeah. And I mean, it just feels like the Buccaneers will, you know, it's a huge spread, but, and the Bucs
secondary has not been good, but yeah, the I think it was like you very early on in the season, you were just like, I don't care about the Dolphins. And it turned out to be right. Like you had a hunch that this was just not a team to really
get excited. And even when Tua comes back, like I'm not sure that this is something that's going to look like markedly better. Like I definitely don't expect them to be, you know, bottom two or three passing game in the league. But, you know, now that Will Fuller is on injury reserve, I don't know. Like this still feels like something I'll be like bottom seven, bottom eight in that territory. Right. And that's not good enough to get you back to playoffs. And then, you know, we don't have to talk about this today because it just is mind numbing, but you know, it brings them to an interesting decision that they might have to make with that quarterback down in Houston this offseason, because it sounds like the owner is really interested in getting that done.
Oh man. Yeah. Saints at the football team. The football team is getting 2.5. You picked the Saints. Your reasoning, Washington is not a good team. They just got lucky with a little falconing last week.
They did. You know, keep in mind, like, this is the first team that the Falcons have looked like the offense that we thought we were going to see all season. You know, Matt Ryan had easily his best game of the season. I think for the week, he was Pro Football Focus's highest graded quarterback with like a 92 grade. So, you know, when you've been kind of getting punched in the mouth all week, all season, I guess the Washington defense is what the doctor ordered. And honestly, like Washington should have lost this game, but you know, it's the Falcons and like random stuff like this happens. You just don't tackle JD McKissick as he's run to the end zone when you have plenty of opportunities and the game ends. Like I still am not convinced that this Washington team is a good team. I think their defense is like really, really bad. And beyond just the defensive line issues that they're suffering, like their cornerback play has been pretty bad. Landon Collins has been pretty bad. And right now they're just kind of relying on Cameron Curl, who's a good player, but you know, it's a former seventh round pick who is playing strong safety for the most part. Like that's tough, and that's a lot to put on his plate to kind of, you know, hold that defense together. So I'm going to roll with the Saints, and I think that Jameis Winston has a pretty strong day as they win this one.
Patriots at Texans. The Texans are getting 7.5. This line says to me that there's a lot of doubt in Vegas about Mac Jones's ability to run the offense because the Texans just lost 40-0. So. And you learned your lesson. You said that you picked the Texans last week, and then in the forverts, you had to write about how bad Davis Mills was.
Right. I had to pull a Stephen A. where, you know, Stephen A. he'll predict something, and if it doesn't come right, he just hammers the team that he predicted.
So, he takes it out on
right,
them.
Right. You got to take it out on them. So I look, against my better judgment, I guess, I picked the Texans to cover a 16.5-point spread, and they didn't get anywhere close to that. I'm just going to learn from my lesson and take the Patriots this week. I don't have too much to say about this game. I mean, Mac Jones versus this Texans team, I couldn't really be less interested.
Yeah. Broncos at Steelers, also not a super interesting game. Steelers minus 1.5. Both of you went with the Broncos. So more faith in Drew Lock than Ben Roethlisberger right now. I have not given this like a ton of thought, but I'm wondering if Pittsburgh's nosedive, right? So this team is 11-0 to start last year. I think it's won two games since then. A lot of those games have been like by 10 points, like double digits, I think. They have barely led. I found a Will Graves tweet. They've led for less than 30 minutes out of a possible 240 in 2021. Like this is a really, really bad football team and has been since late last year. It's the nosedive is just startling how quickly it fell off.
Yeah. There were warning signs last year because the offense was never good, even as they were winning games. But now, like, the bottom has totally fallen out. Wonder if Juju Smith-Schuster feels like he should be in Baltimore or Kansas City right now instead of Pittsburgh. But you know, part of the problem is like the defense has not been as good as it was last year. You know, they're not getting sacks at the same rate. Their coverage has not been as good. And when your offense continues to get worse from where they were last year, it's a pretty bad strategy for you know, trying to build a team. And shockingly, as people said last year, or not last year, but earlier this year during the draft, Najee Harris has not fixed any of your problems on this offense. you know, your quarterback still is not willing to throw downfield. Your offensive line still can't block. And now he's just in a situation where he's getting the ball in back-to-back weeks on fourth and long and just getting pummeled behind the line of scrimmage. So, you know, I don't really see where this team gets better, where anything gets alleviated. And you're right. Like, it's been such a fast drop-off for them. Like, Steelers fans have to be feeling whiplash. Like, you were just here in, you know, being considered a Super Bowl contender, I think, by casual fans, you know, this time last year. Go to 11-0, and since then it's just been absolutely horrendous. But you know, I don't really feel bad for Big Ben, so that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see a Mike Tomlin team falling off quite this much. Like you said, like we all last year were like, "This is fake. This is not real. This is not an 11-0 football team. Like, do not compare this to other 11-0 football teams in history." We were saying that for sure, but to drop off this far, it's just been really, really ugly. Lions at Vikings. Vikings giving 8.5 here, which that seems, I thought, you know, I looked at it, I thought it was a big spread for a Lions team that's been pretty feisty. But you point out that it's hard to be feisty week after week after week.
And yeah, so
you
actually went it's tough. Man, I think last week we kind of saw the wheels fall off a little bit on where this Lions team was dealing. Because, you know, They played teams tougher than that Bears team, and I think that that game kind of got away from them a little bit towards the end. They couldn't keep Justin Fields down. And I think that, you know, talent wins out in the end, and it's hard to just put up forth those efforts week after week after week, and then you lose your best pass rusher. I think this is the game where the Vikings roll.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense to me. I mean, Kirk Cousins was terrible last week, and might just have one of his Kirk games this week where he goes for like 390 and 4 touchdowns.
Yes.
It happens. Packers at Bengals. Bengals are getting 3.5.
I want Packers. It makes me sad to say, but I kind of feel like we're underrating this Bengals team a little bit, maybe. Because like quietly their pass defense has been pretty good, and I'm sure that is partly because of who they've played. But you know, they're like fourth in yards per play, seventh in first down percentage on defense. Like, they're actually kind of showing up when they need to. So maybe this is gonna be a tougher test for the Packers than I think. But right now it's just kind of hard for me to think that, you know, they're good enough to take down Aaron Rodgers. But I think that, you know, in terms of season building narratives as we go along with this Bengals team, like, this is a pretty huge game for them, because you know, you've got the Vikings week one, which they can be all over the place, and they were just okay that week. You got the Bears week two, which was a loss. You played the Steelers week three, which is, you know, we just talked about the mannequin they have playing quarterback there. And then you got the Jaguars last week, which, you know, you got them pre-scandal, but it's still post-scandal because it's always Urban Meyer.
Yeah. That brings us actually to Titans at Jags. Jags getting 4.5. Both of you went with the Titans. You are seeing the Urban distraction as something that will hurt the Jags here.
Yeah, I mean, they said this week earlier that they had to cancel meetings about the Titans to deal with this. Like, that, you know, I tend to be someone that when I hear, you know, player X is a distraction, yeah, like, okay, whatever. But no, this is like a real deal distraction that the Jaguars kind of need to power through. And I think it's just so funny that you have had you're going to have a 10-day break from your, you know, your Thursday night game against Cincinnati to the game against the Titans. And you've wasted about half of that prep time by dealing with this, you know, nonsense that Urban has brought into your lap. So, you know, the Titans, they are super duper banged up. You know, you can go out and look at their injury report. Last time I looked, I want to say they had 22 players on the injury list. Looks like Julio Jones is probably going to miss this game too with a hamstring injury. AJ Brown practiced this week, so we'll see what happens there. But that's tough, but not as tough as dealing with your head coaching and cheating scandal in the middle of the season.
Yeah. Kudos to Trevor Lawrence when he was asked about this. I thought his quote was, you know, obviously he's been in the national spotlight for a long time. Like, he knows this is not new to him, but the way he handled it, he's still my head coach. I still respect him regardless of what happens. Like, it's such a dagger to just be like, well, yeah, like he's the head coach. So I sort of have to respect him. I get paid to respect him. Like, it was very revealing without being 100% revealing, you know, like it was shrouded enough. And he had other quotes saying like, oh, we're coming together as a team. Everything's like, he's saying all the right things, right? He's saying the things he has to say, but you do not have to read very far between the lines to know that this has been a mess that none of the players, I think, appreciate or really wanted to deal with this week. So it's the Urban Meyer experience, man.
Yeah.
It's Bears. Terrible. Yeah. Yeah. Bears at Raiders. Raiders giving 4.5 here.
I took the Raiders here. I want to take Justin Fields in his first game, but I just feel like this pass rush is going to be a lot to overcome. It's like, this Raiders defense has been, like, you know, weirdly kind of good this season. I know last week the Chargers was kind of a bad performance for them, but hey, man, this Bears offense is not anything to get too excited about. So, you know, I think Justin Fields will have his plays, but just when you have like the overall cohesion of where the Raiders are right now, I'm going to take them.
Yeah. I guess Derek Carr was a little miffed about the about what Bosa said. Huh? He was not happy.
Yeah,
he
wasn't very happy.
Man. Well, I look forward to the next time those teams play and he can stand in there when Bosa's coming down on him. See how that goes. Browns at Chargers. Chargers. Wow, giving 1.5 here. It's just revealed that Baker Mayfield, who's not been anywhere close to his, you know, very decent self, he's really been off this season. He apparently has a left shoulder injury, so an injury in his non-throwing shoulder, and everyone now is trying to figure out how much that is impacting him. He posted to Instagram sort of one of those inspirational messages where he's going to keep battling and everyone has each other's backs and we love each other and change the course of humanity or something. I don't know. There was a lot to the message, but
yeah, I didn't read all of it at all.
what do you see happening here? You went with the Chargers.
I mean, Baker's just not playing well right now. I don't know how much the shoulder injury has to do with that, but just like, in a vacuum, like, I'm going to take Justin Herbert over Baker Mayfield pretty easily. And, you know, I think Baker has the better team around him, but it's just, you know, with the spread this small, I just am inclined to take the better quarterback. I mean, 1.5 points. Seems like Vegas looks as a team, like the Browns are slightly better, and that's how I view it too. But when you have a quarterback as talented as Justin Herbert, you know, even with the Browns defense being a tough challenge, especially on the ground, you know, I think that he's going to be able to make some big plays this week.
49ers at Cardinals. Cardinals giving 5.5. Charles Curtis went with the Niners. You stuck with the Cardinals just because Kyler Murray is playing so well. I guess this is another team in flux. Like, we talked a little bit about the Bears, and is the offense going to be built for Justin Fields? And Jimmy G has been his typical Jimmy G self. He's dealt with injury. At some point, do we see this offense turn to what it needs to be for Trey Lance to succeed? You know, it feels like this is a hard game to bet on, because Kyle Shanahan, we know, is really smart and can probably find a way to win with Trey Lance under center, but he's been trying to do a lot, right? He's been trying to work him in slowly. He's been trying to optimize Jimmy G, which is, as we've discussed so many times in this show, a tough thing to do. So it's just a question of, like, is this the week that he unveils whatever he needs to do with Trey Lance? And it's, you know, we have no indication. It's hard for us to know that from where we sit. So what do you see from this game?
I like the Cardinals. Trey Lance didn't play all that great when he got in last week. And Kyle Shanahan, after the game, he was like, oh, you know, I didn't really have a game plan for him, which I guess is
right.
Fair. I guess that's kind of fair because you're not going to the game expecting Jimmy to get hurt, though. Maybe you should at this point.
At some point.
This is kind of the reason why you picked Trey Lance, you know? Right. because, you know, that after the draft pick, they talked about Jimmy's availability. So, you know, I thought that maybe you would be more, you know, cognizant that this is a possibility. But, you know, I think, you know, getting ready for this Cardinals team is tough. I will say that the Cardinals run defense is so bad that the 49ers might be able to win the game that way. But, you know, on the flip side, like, I just don't really think that this 49ers secondary has much to write home about right now. And the Cardinals offense are just overwhelming. So I'm going to take them. But, you know, now that I think about it, if Trey starts, they can really get that running game going because that's just an added dimension that you have to take care of. And they're not taking care of the little stuff right now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Giants and Cowboys. Cowboys giving 6.5 in this one. Both of you picked the Cowboys.
Yeah, I think the Giants might be a little bit better than their record suggests, but
sure.
Joe Judge is still really bad at this, and so is Jason Garrett, and they're kind of squandering the talent they have on the team right now, and the Cowboys are doing the opposite by maximizing what they have out there. So I'm going to take the Cowboys.
All right. Bills at Chiefs. Chiefs minus 2.5. Interesting.
Look, I think the Bills have a claim to be like the best team in the NFL right now, but they also just played Davis Mills, which I think is probably skewing a lot of the numbers right now.
Right.
Like, I'm pretty sure in terms of basically like pass defense, turnover percentage, yards per play, first down percentage, they're like by far the best defense in the league, which, you know, so far we have a small sample size, and that sample size can be skewed by playing Davis Mills, who threw like 87 yards and 4 interceptions. So, Patrick Mahomes is a little bit of a different challenge. I do think that the Bills are a better overall team, especially when you look at where the Chiefs defense is and how they're, you know, basically on pace to be one of the worst defenses that we see in quite some time. And the worst defense of, you know, this Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid era in Kansas City. So, you know, Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs should be able to have some success. But at the end of the day, I'm going to roll with the Chiefs because they have Patrick Mahomes, and I really don't have anything more deeper than that.
Yeah. I mean, I was a little surprised that so many people were so quick to anoint the Bills after beating the Texans. Cause it was like, to me, you just sort of throw that game out. It's like, you know, how much do you really learn? I mean, it felt like a college, an FCS game, you know, like Alabama or somebody playing a team from a different level. And like, you know, they just went out and beat them the way they're supposed to beat them. 40-0 is obviously a big shocking score when you're talking about an NFL game, but like it's hard to really quantify how overmatched that Texans team is just in general. And, you know, the Bills showed some warts early in the season. I for one, definitely still have some questions about them. So, you know, I think it's fair to go with the Chiefs, as you did here. Colts at Ravens. This is the Monday night game. Ravens minus 6.5.
Yeah, I think the Ravens because Carson Wentz is not very good. Lamar Jackson is very good.
You used verbs this time. You used in your story. You got rid of the verbs. You were so done with this story. Carson Wentz not good. Lamar Jackson very good. This is the analysis you crave.
Yeah,
so.
That's really all I got. I mean, Wentz played better against the Dolphins last week, but I think the Ravens provide a little bit of a tougher test. And then, man, like I think that after this game, we might have to start talking about Lamar Jackson like as an MVP candidate. I don't know if people are there right now, but you know, the things that he's done to keep this offense afloat, with all the injuries they've had has been like absolutely incredible to me. So, I'm going to take him, with the points. I think they, you know, play a pretty convincing game on Sunday. And you know, I'm excited to see what Lamar Jackson can do, because I think right now he's playing some of the best football of his career. If he, you know, Marquise Brown doesn't come into that Lions game with, like, you know, grease all over his gloves, you're talking about like a 4-touchdown day that game. So
right.
And the next week he makes that like diving, you know, he was wide open and he, like, is probably looked more impressive than it actually was, but he, you know, makes that diving catch.
Right. I'm like, where was that? Like when these passes were just hitting you straight in the hands, like, you catch it. I think Lamar's playing great football right now. I think they might get Rashad Bateman back this week, hopefully,
right.
Because I think he's put together like almost 2 weeks of practice now. So hopefully he plays this week, and you know, that'll be another weapon for them as they, you know, try to get back to the playoffs behind their MVP level quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm super excited to see Bateman. I felt even going into the draft that he would be a good fit for this team and sort of the type of receiver that they needed, both for Jackson to be able to target, but also as sort of a counterpoint to Hollywood Brown. So I really want to see that. And there is a feeling, it's funny, there's a feeling here in Baltimore that like there was all the dread earlier in the season because like running backs just kept getting hurt. And then running backs and cornerbacks got hurt on the same day. Like there was just all the Peters got hurt. Like there was so much dread, right? So this is all narrative driven because like people were down in the dumps when they came into the season feeling it was gonna be great, and then so many injuries, and now we're back to this point where like everyone's like, oh, it's magical, like what's happening with this team, it's really special, the fact that they've been able to make it through the way they have. Interesting for me to watch sort of the Ravens fans as they go through this season. But you know, Lamar is just like, he's great, man. Like, you know, I don't know how many times we have to say it, but he's a really special player, is still growing. He's only 24 years old, still adding things to his game. You can see it as really, really fun player to watch. All right. Is there anything we didn't hit on from this week in the NFL? Anything going on? Anything lingering in your brain, Chuck?
No, I think we kind of hit on everything. I mean, it was overshadowed by the Urban Meyer stuff, and that doesn't appear to be going away anytime. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, his whole like, oh, this is not something for me to fix. It's with the leadership of the team. Like, everything about this guy is so transparent, right? Like, trying to act like a coach of the people that just puts his faith in the players is like, it's
fraud.
Pretty, yeah. Absolute fraud. All right. This has been The Counter. Find us on Twitter. He's at Forverts. I'm at Chris Corman. Read For The Win, ftw.usatoday.com. All sorts of stuff there that you'll enjoy. And join us next week. We generally have been releasing on Tuesday afternoon once Charles posts his weekly Forverts column, an absolute must read each week. So hopefully we will talk to you then. Thanks for joining us today. Take care.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.